Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. They'll eat your guts and spit them out. And when your bones begin to rot, the worms remain, but you do not. So don't ever laugh as a hearse goes by. For someday you'll be next in line. And when death brings his cold despair, ask yourself, will anyone care?
Macabre may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Well, I made my drink.
What'd you make?
Margarita.
Ooh, yes.
It's excellent. Very strong.
Ooh, what flavor?
Normal.
Nice. Excellent choice.
Since this episode is cue for quackery, it is considered medicine.
Indeed.
I'm treating myself this episode in preparation for our drunken macabre history episode that we're recording next.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Patreon, hope you're ready.
Yep. We love it. It's going to be so much fun.
I know. I'm so excited.
I feel like I needed it. We needed it. We needed it.
Mm-hmm.
We had some, like, I don't know, some sad, sappy, dark episodes at the end of the holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, the holiday season always gets you.
Yes.
You know?
Agreed.
So it's kind of nice to just do something funny and different and...
Right. Bring in the new year with some humor.
Yeah. And yes, so this is our first alphabet episode of after the new year. So Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, fam.
Heck fam. Yeah. We hope you had a wonderful holiday season, wonderful new year, and we hope that this year, 2025, will bring you amazing things.
Yes. And we thank you for joining us for our first episode of the new year.
Yeah. And thank you.
What a way to kick it off.
Yeah. If you're new here, it's a good one to really get to know us.
Yeah.
And how we work over here at Macabre.
So I guess we should say welcome. Welcome to Macabre.
Hello.
A dark history podcast. I'm Hallie.
I'm Blair.
And we're back with another round of Q. Q is for quackery.
Mm-hmm.
And we're bringing you another dose of the worst ways people tried to cure what ailed them throughout history.
Oh, we're in for it.
Yeah. If you listen to the first season, you have a pretty good idea of what's about to go down.
Uh-huh.
We're going to quack you up.
Oh, yeah, we are.
And I'm going to be drinking this episode in preparation for the Drunk Macabre episode we're going to record for Patreon. So bear with me.
It's going to be it.
I am just getting over being sick, oddly enough.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
'Tis the season.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Tequila always makes me feel better, so. Yay.
Up here in the Midwest, we use blackberry brandy.
Oh, that sounds really good.
In Wisconsin. Yeah. Tasty, and it will soothe your things.
Or make you forget about being sick altogether.
Yeah.
If you drink enough of it.
Right.
All right. Well, this one is a long one. Or it might not be. I mean, I'm going to do a little bit of like, I don't know. It's just going to be kind of like a morsel episode, but there's going to be some stories mixed in. But I'm basically going to just go through a list of different treatments, talk about them. There might be a little storytelling along the way.
Awesome.
And yeah, let's get into it because I have a pretty big list. You ready for this?
I'm so excited. Yeah.
All right.
I can't wait.
Let's start with milk.
Whoa. All right.
It does a body good. Or does it?
Oh.
We're going to start with the milk transfusion experiments.
Oh.
Have you heard of that?
No.
Okay. All right. So between 1873 and 1880, there was an attempt in the medical community to use milk as a replacement for blood. At this time in history, cholera was rampant and blood types hadn't been discovered yet. That bit of science wasn't discovered until 1901 by Karl Landsteiner. So the prevailing theory was that maybe, just maybe, milk could be used to replace blood. And this genius idea was introduced by doctors Edwin Hodder and James Bovell. In the 19th century, the idea blood to milk transfusions arose as part of a desperate attempt to treat cholera during a time when medical science was still grappling with its understanding of the disease. Cholera, as you know, caused rapid dehydration and death, and physicians were eager to find a remedy to save lives, even if the science behind the methods was speculative or poorly understood. And here's why they turned to this unusual practice. Medical professionals knew that dehydration and loss of vital fluids were the main killers, but they lacked effective rehydration therapies. And milk was seen as being wholesome, nourishing, and they thought that it had curative properties for many ailments. Physicians theorized that milk could replace the fluids lost during cholera, or that its perceived purity might counteract the disease. So, doctors Edwin Hodder and James Bovell came up with this crazy idea that milk could be used as a transfusion method to replace blood. So, they started out by experimenting with injecting different animal milks, like cow milk, goat's milk, and they just put it right in the old bloodstream, believing that it could just be a substitute, just put it right in there in any type of crisis situation. The milk was typically diluted and injected intravenously, often leading to disastrous results because we know now that milk proteins are not compatible with human blood.
No. Milk's good for the bones, not good for the blood.
Nope. So the body naturally had some severe immune reactions, caused some blockages, and ultimately death. Yeah. So, as it turns out, milk does not do a body good in this scenario.
Oh.
Think cottage cheese, people.
Yep. Curdles turns...
Cottage cheese blood.
Yeah. Well, they talk about, like, almost instantaneously, when you put certain things in the blood, it basically turns to the consistency of peanut butter. I can't fucking imagine.
Yep, yep. So let that sit on your noodle tonight when you're sleeping. How would you like to be patient zero for that?
No.
But fun fact, if you don't know this, coconut water was reportedly used during World War II successfully in remote locations during emergency situations as an IV treatment for cases of severe dehydration. And yeah, so when it's taken from a sealed coconut, it's sterile. It contains potassium, sodium, and magnesium, also calcium, which are essential electrolytes for the human body. And its composition is somewhat similar to that of plasma in human blood. So It can be used in extreme case scenarios.
Interesting. But,
we at Macabre do not recommend self-administering a coconut water IV. Don't do that.
No.
We have IV bars, so go there if you're hungover and you need a little something.
Well, crap. There's like little powder packets now.
Oh, yeah.
That you can put in your...
You know, Gatorade, something like that.
Yeah. Oh. Oh. But, not milk.
Yeah, not milk. All right, moving on to the next one. And Blair, this is really going to make your lungs hurt.
Oh, great.
Take a drag for asthma.
Ha! I did. I know about this one.
Cigarettes for respiratory ailments and hay fever. In the 19th and 20th centuries, early 20th century, I'll say, tobacco was surprisingly advertised and occasionally recommended by parts of the medical community as a remedy for asthma and other respiratory conditions. This now discredited practice emerged from limited understanding of respiratory physiology and the influence of shady advertising. Surprise, surprise. Here's a breakdown of how tobacco became associated with asthma treatment. Tobacco, when smoked or inhaled, was believed to relax the airways and ease breathing in asthma sufferers. And in some respects, it did have that effect, but only temporarily. Mm-hmm. But for me personally, I tried a cigarette once. It did not go well. I think I was a child when I did that. Don't ask me the details on that, but I nearly coughed up both of my lungs. It was not relaxing at all.
Mm-mm.
I can tell you that. They also thought that because tobacco contained nicotine, which has some muscle relaxing properties, that it might relieve bronchial spasms associated with asthma. Smoke from burning tobacco or herbs was also thought to reduce inflammation and clear airways, though this effect was likely transient and not beneficial long term.
Oh, man. Yeah. Coming from somebody who has lung problems and has their whole life, fuck that. No.
Yeah. Now, interestingly.
I can't be around cigarettes.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, no, no shade on people who choose to smoke and, you know,
teach
I have family members who do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my sister, like, she has to because it calms her down. And, like, she's been doing it her whole life. And to each their own, it's just not a choice. Not a choice for me. But products like asthma cigarettes were marketed specifically for people with asthma. That's what is so crazy about this. And they claim that it provided immediate relief, which is what is so interesting. Mixtures containing tobacco and other herbs like belladonna were sold as powders to be burned and inhaled. Now, can you imagine thinking back to our killer plants episode?
Mm-hmm. And aqua tofana.
Yes. Yeah. Smoking belladonna is not on my list of things to do anytime soon.
No. No. Oh.
Now.
Just hearing about this makes my chest hurt.
I knew it was going to. Yeah. Now, this is where it gets really crazy. We already know how bad advertisements and marketing around tobacco has been in the past. Mm-hmm. Well, back then, in this era, they were advertising it to parents of asthmatic children. So if your child had asthma, they were promoting cigarettes to the kids as a cure-all. And the doctors were on board with this, and they were backing these advertisements. So, you know, not much has changed.
Yeah, really. No, it just looks a little different now.
Yeah. And there's I have a quote from a 1923 advertisement for Old Gold cigarette brand, which was produced by the American Tobacco Company. They claimed in their advertisements, and this is in quote, guaranteed relief for asthma sufferers. And of course, it wasn't until the mid 20th century that long-term effects of tobacco and the connection to lung issues, COPD, cancers, and other cardiovascular issues would come to light.
Mm-hmm.
And that, my friends, is a perfect example of the medical community and advertisers blowing smoke right up your ass.
Yes.
Pun.
Great.
Pun intended.
Absolutely. Oh, and I mean, think about how much of a craze that became. It was so quick. And I mean, gosh, even when we were younger, I mean, you couldn't go anywhere without people. I mean, every single public building you went in, basically, you could see cigarette haze all over the place.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I rode around in the car with my dad with the windows rolled up.
Yep. Yep. Smoking sections in restaurants. Like, that made a fucking difference, you know? Oh, man. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now we need a little cure for that cough.
Oh.
And this one, I call it the cure is worse than the crying, because this one was actually sold as a cure for crying babies, too.
Oh, no.
This one was a cough syrup that was sold before, you know, NyQuil and all that stuff. Oh, no. Have you heard of Mrs. Winslow's cough syrup? Soothing syrup?
Was this the one that was basically cocaine?
So.
Oh.
So I'll give you the rundown on this.
Okay.
So long before taking a little too much NyQuil and seeing the Hat Man in your sleep, there was Mrs. Winslow's soothing syrup. Because this shit was so strong, you didn't see anything in your sleep. This one was introduced in 1849. By a New York nurse, Mrs. Charlotte N. Winslow, and it was later marketed by her son-in-law and business partner, Jeremiah Curtis and Benjamin Perkins. It contained a combination of morphine sulfate, alcohol, sugar, and flavorings. So that morphine sulfate is the key here.
Oh.
So real heavy on the opium.
Uh-huh.
Real heavy on the opium.
Wow.
Yeah. So we got a pretty good combination of morphine and alcohol going on.
Damn.
It was designed for infants, and it was marketed to alleviate pain from teething, colic, diarrhea, and general fussiness. It was advertised as safe, effective, and essential for mothers.
Oh my gosh.
The target audience was mothers, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It was portrayed as a solution to struggles for childcare. So you got a fussy baby, give them some of this. It'll calm them right down, get them to go to sleep. You know, the ad campaigns were heavy on the emotional aspect, you know, using persuasive language like perfectly harmless, mother's best friend, all that. Of course, became immensely popular in the U.S., Europe, and even beyond that, and like made a shit ton of money, right?
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. Now, the dark side of this is it was heavy on morphine.
Yeah. Oh.
It was not regulated, and there were no like real dosing.
That was my question. Is there an instructions on how much to give a baby? Like,
oh, not really. So that's the problem. Babies are extremely sensitive to opioids.
Uh-huh.
And this caused fatal overdoses. And the way it caused the overdose was because it caused respiratory depression and death.
Oh, damn.
And a lot of parents were unaware of this, right? The danger of morphine in the cough syrup.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't really know how to properly dose their kids. So they were giving them way too much. And not only that, but this was highly addictive.
Mm-hmm.
As opioids are. This became an epidemic. And the records from this time frame suggest that the syrup contributed to countless deaths. But the numbers are unknown because of how poor the records were at the time. But it got the name Baby Killer. So,
dang.
That's that. It wasn't an insignificant number of deaths. We'll say that.
Yeah. Well, with that kind of cocktail.
Yes. And it eventually did cause regulatory changes. So it prompted the Pure Food and Drug Act of 1906.
Well, that's
which meant that manufacturers had to disclose ingredients that outlawed false advertising of medicinal products. it was forced to eliminate morphine as an ingredient. And that, of course, fucked up their reputation.
Mm-hmm.
And then as public awareness of the dangers of narcotics grew, sales of the cough syrup declined. And then by the 1930s, the product basically disappeared from the market.
Wow. Oh. Why?
Yeah. Now, moving on to medical cannibalism.
What?
Because that's a thing, yeah.
Oh my gosh, no.
And you need to know about it because I know about it. Oh. So we're gonna talk about cannibalistic remedies now.
Mm. Yummy.
Human remains as medicine.
Oh,
and this
oh,
is
no.
going to cover different periods of time, some of which we've already talked about a little bit in previous episodes. But let's start with the Renaissance.
Okay.
So during the Renaissance in the 17th and into the 18th centuries, many people believed in the healing properties of human remains. This was influenced by a variety of factors, including superstition, beliefs in alchemy, and philosophies of humoral theory, which suggested that human bodies contained valuable and curative properties. Mm-hmm. Some people believe that consuming human flesh or body parts could transfer the strength, health, or qualities of the person to the consumer, a notion that was rooted in sympathetic magic. So it was not uncommon for people during that time to consume human remains.
Oh boy.
Not only during that time, but gladiator blood in ancient Rome.
Yep.
Romans, particularly those in imperial court, believed that drinking the blood of gladiators could cure a variety of ailments, including epilepsy and other conditions associated with the brain.
Mm-hmm.
We know that gladiators were associated with having very strong and powerful bodies, and their mm-hmm. blood was seen as a life force that could, right. if consumed, imbue the drinker with vitality and healing powers.
The blood is the life.
Yes, and so that became like part of their medical rituals, highly sought after. And let's not forget about the ancient Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
Mummy powder for pain relief.
Yep. Oh, man. Oh.
This actually became very popular during the Renaissance.
Really?
They were consuming mummy powder. Yeah. In Europe. They were taking it from the preserved bodies of mummies.
Damn.
That they were, you know, crushing that up and using it for headaches and wounds. Everything
doing
from
that in the Renaissance.
Yep.
Oh,
it was being sold as wonder drugs. They put it in alcohol.
Oh my gosh.
They put it in salves to use it as tinctures.
Damn. Yep.
The trade for mummies, like during the 16th century, this was huge. Like mummy powders were fucking huge in the 16th century.
Now that when you said bones, that jog my memory about a king. Oh, now of course I can't remember his name, but Mad King something. Because one of his like healthy, like trying to stay, you know, good and well, he was constantly taking this elixir that had mercury and ground up bone in it.
Wonder if it had mummy in it.
Maybe it did. Oof.
And let's not talk
to.
Oh, what cocktail?
A macabre cocktail.
Oh, yeah. Macabre cocktail for sure. And let's not forget about corpse jerky.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah. I mean, we had that in our previous episode, but it was also prevalent in 17th century Germany.
Really?
Yes. So this was darker manifestation of medical cannibalism in 17th century Germany during periods of war or disease.
Oh.
Some people resorted to consuming the bodies of the deceased, particularly if they thought they had any medicinal value. Corpse jerky refers to the practice of drying out human flesh, as we know, from the dead and making it portable and then consuming it. Some people believe that the fresh, dead human flesh could cure ailments. And whatever reason, they thought this was like a thing during times of famine and plague. Sorry, but I don't really think I want to eat corpse jerky during a time of plague.
No. No. Yeah.
And then they like went as far as like butchering the bodies and selling them as medicinal meat.
Spreading that disease like fucking butter on bread, my friend. Oh. Yeah.
No wonder there was a plague.
Yeah. No wonder it didn't stop. It just
It kept going.
Oh my gosh. So many fucking waves because it's like, well.
Yeah.
You know what this person died of? No? Fine. That's fine. I mean, the village they came from, riddled with plague. But I'm sure they're fine. Let's sell it.
Ugh. No. And then the mummy, back to the mummy thing, like, it was so highly sought after that it became an issue with people creating fake mummies.
Out of what?
Use your imagination. Grave robbers.
Oh, no.
And they would, like, wrap the human remains in cloth. And then try to pass them off as real mummies. So yeah, they fake mummies. That's how profitable the mummy trade was at one point.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
No.
Well, let's move past the inhaling the dried corpse powder and move on to another white powder that was used as a cure-all.
Cocaine.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug, as Dave Chappelle would say. And this was from the 1880s to the early 1900s.
Okay.
And I have a really fun fact, and I had an epiphany about it, and we're going to talk about that, because I was like, what? I love it when I have epiphanies. Right? I get so excited. Right. Okay. So cocaine's medicinal properties were first explored in the 1860s, after being extracted from coca leaves. By the 1880s, it was marketed for everything from depression to toothaches, and yes, even hay fever. But I get it. I get it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
I get it.
Remember when we talked about them with your surgical theater talk?
Yeah, they for the eyes.
Yes.
It fucking works. That's why I get it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, as weird as it is, I mean, it's potent. I mean, you
it
know.
It works.
Like, yeah, but it works.
I'm not condoning it, but it fucking works.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like the, okay, well, we can't really sedate you while we open you up for some exploratory surgery, so here's some cocaine.
What?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
I mean, they raved about how well it worked, but they weren't wrong. It did fucking work. It's addictive. It's highly addictive, but it fucking works. So. Yeah.
You're like, ooh.
Yeah.
Invincible.
Yep. So cocaine was widely used, as we know, in available in over-the-counter products and prescriptions, often mixed into lozenges, tonics, and nasal sprays, Coca-Cola from 1886 to 1904.
Yep. If you didn't know that by now, come on.
Yeah. They had a nice run.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they had to invent Santa to bring Coca-Cola back after they took cocaine out.
Yep.
Fun fact. So how it was used for hay fever, and I do get it because, you know, I mean, it will open up your nasal passages and cause giant holes in your nose.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a fact.
Yep.
Okay. So nasal sprays and powders. Patients would sniff or spray cocaine-laced products directly into their noses. Cocaine's numbing and vasoconstrictive properties reduce nasal inflammation and temporarily cleared up congestion, offering instant, if fleeting, relief. So it did work.
Mm-hmm.
Even if for a short period of time. But hey, you keep doing it and you're going to be just fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lozenges and tonics. Cocaine was also included in lozenges or liquid tonics marketed as remedies for respiratory issues, claiming to provide lasting relief. Again, it gets the juices flowing. Mm-hmm. Just makes your sinuses drain.
Yeah.
Self-administration. Patients were encouraged to use these products liberally. often resulting in dependence. Advertisements touted cocaine as a safe, everyday solution to hay fever symptoms, with no mention of its addictive potential. Hey, if it works, just keep using it.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think there were so many snuff boxes back in the day?
Oh, I would like to own one of those, actually. I'd love to find one of those at, like, an antique store. That'd be dope.
On the East Coast, you can totally find a bunch of them.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah.
Next time I go visit my friends in Connecticut, I'm going to see if I can find one.
Get one. And they're really cool. A little painted. Yep.
And why was it so appealing? It worked fast. And it numbed your nasal passages. It gave you quick relief from sneezing and itching. It was considered a modern marvel. Mm-hmm. And prominent physicians of the time were endorsing it. So, hey.
Yeah.
You know? Hey, what do you do?
Right.
The doctors were saying it worked. Now, why was it bad? Well, it led to dependency. You kept having to use more and more of it. It was addictive to everyone.
Yeah.
It became a huge problem.
Yeah.
Long-term use caused some pretty gnarly damage to your nasal tissues, including perforated septums.
Yep.
And by the early 20th century, they had a pretty good understanding of how addictive it was and started to get banned in many of the countries in the 1910s and the 1920s. And this is where I had my epiphany.
Oh.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Okay. So, 1920s.
Yes.
Yes. Why were the 1920s so great?
You know why.
And I literally my notes go, oh shit, I just had an epiphany. No wonder the 1920s were called the Roaring Twenties.
Uh-huh.
Think about the impact cocaine had on that era.
Oh, yeah.
Alcohol was fucking illegal. So what did they do instead?
Exactly.
And then I was like, Google that shit. I was right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they started doing cocaine instead of alcohol.
Uh-huh. Exactly. That's why you had all of the wild things.
And then I looked it up, and then I have more notes. By the 1920s, cocaine was no longer just a medicine. It had infiltrated nightlife and gained popularity as a recreational drug. Its stimulant effects, euphoria, confidence, and boundless energy fit perfectly with the fast-paced, jazz-driven social scene of the decade. Prohibition banned alcohol, but inadvertently boosted cocaine's presence in underground clubs and speakeasies. Dealers and bootleggers often provided both substances for their elite clientele. Mic drop.
Yep, exactly.
We're going to have to do like a 1920s macabre.
Yeah.
Bootlegging episode. That's going to be so much fun.
I agree. I'm excited.
Some mobster, some mafia, some Al Capone.
Right.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that idea. Hey. We're not done with season two, but season three as well. But oh, man. We might be able to sneak so something in this one. I know.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff to talk about. Packed.
We had never-ending content.
Never-ending.
All right. This one's really going to get you.
Oh, no.
It's short, but it's just a funny one. You ready?
Yeah.
The goose grease cure.
Oh, no.
In medieval Europe, goose grease was a go-to remedy for ailments ranging from chest colds to joint pain. Application process. Slather it on generously and hope for the best. For added flair, wrap the patient in a wool blanket to seal in the magic. Mention the odor. Goose fat, combined with illness, probably made for medieval bedrooms smell delightful. Nothing says I'm healing like smelling like a Christmas dinner goose. While this remedy didn't cure much, at least it kept people moisturized.
Oily.
This next one. Oh, I love this next one. This next one is so good. I have to take off my glove because my hand's getting sweaty from laughing. All right. Have you heard of the Whale Hotel?
No.
All right.
Oh, no. Going from goose grease to Whale Hotel. Oh, no.
All right. This unusual treatment trend took place primarily in the late 19th and early 20th centuries in whaling communities, particularly in Australia. The idea was, as strange as it sounds, sufferers of rheumatism, arthritis, or other joint pain were placed inside the carcass of a freshly killed whale, with the belief that this decomposing animal's warmth and oils had curative properties. But wait, I have to tell you how this starts.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. No.
And I'll say I'm halfway through my margarita.
Yeah, I'm halfway through my wine.
Okay. The origin story. A drunken discovery.
Whoa.
Legend has it that the practice of using whale carcasses to treat rheumatism started not with a doctor or a healer, but with a drunken fisherman in Eden, Australia, in the late 1800s. Here's how the story goes. One particularly rowdy evening, a local fisherman, let's call him Angus McTavish, had indulged in far too much grog after a day at sea. Uh-huh. Angus was well known around the whaling town for his colorful storytelling and his constant complaints about devil's curse in his bones, what we now know as rheumatism. After hours of drinking, Angus stumbled onto a beach near the whaling station. The tide was out, the moon was high, and the fresh carcass of a massive whale lay abandoned on the shore, with its innards spilling out like a macabre welcome mat. Well, what did Angus do, you might ask? Whether it was the grog or sheer exhaustion, Angus had the brilliant idea to crawl inside the still warm whale carcass for a nap. He claimed it was the only place nearby that felt warm enough to soothe his aching joints. And hey, after a night of drinking, the smell of a dead whale carcass didn't seem to bother him at all. Go ahead.
Who just fucking does that? I mean, how drunk do you have to be in order to be like, that right there, my friend, that's going to work for me.
When Angus woke up after his whale hotel nap, oh my god, it's happening already.
Yeah, it's okay.
Let me start again. Oh shit. When Angus woke up after his whale hotel nap, reeking of decomposing whale, something extraordinary seemed to have happened. His joints felt looser. His pain was greatly diminished. He hobbled back to the village and began telling anyone who would listen that he had discovered a cure for rheumatism. His whale tale spread quickly, and before long, others were clamoring for their turn inside the next freshly killed whale. With this kind of hype and word flying around town that a fresh whale carcass could cure arthritis, the local whalers saw an opportunity to make some extra cash. They added whale cure as part of their services. The afflicted could pay a small fee to spend a few hours inside a whale carcass, and the practice gained popularity among those desperate for relief from chronic pain. It was even marketed as a natural spa experience, long before that became a buzzword.
Oh my gosh! What the f-
Now, the science, or lack thereof.
Yeah.
Practitioners claim that the practitioners claim that the in quotes, they claim that the warmth of the decomposing whale's body acted like a natural sauna, soothing aches and pains. Okay.
Okay,
yeah, fair. Whale oil, rich in nutrients and used in various 19th century remedies, was believed to seep into the skin and provide additional healing. There was no real scientific evidence for these claims, of course. Now, I have to give you the treatment process. Are you ready for this?
Oh, man. Yes.
This is the most macabre part of this whole episode.
Oh, no.
I got to give it to you because this is my favorite part of this episode. All right. Step one. The whale, freshly killed. The body cleaned of some of its internal organs to create space. Step two.
Some.
Just enough to create space for someone to crawl in.
Oh my gosh.
Step two. Patient stripped down to undergarments or minimal clothing and then inserted into the whale's body cavity, typically the whale's belly. Huh? Step three. They remain inside the carcass for several hours, soaking in the warmth and the oils. The heat from the decaying blubber was thought to draw out toxins and ease joint inflammation. Step four, after a prescribed number of hours or however long the patient could stand it, they were finally removed, often smelling of decomposing whale.
Oh.
A small price to pay for the cure. With that being said, listeners, I want you to think about a couple things. And Blair, the recommended cure was to stay inside the carcass for 30 hours.
What?
30 hours to get up to 12 months of relief from arthritis.
What?
Now, while you were in said whale carcass for up to 30 hours, you would have likely be partially submerged in a mixture of blood, decomposing whale flesh, whale fluids. The abdominal cavity of the whale would be the most odorous part of the body of the whale, thanks to the early stages of decomposition and the remnants of its last meal. So, not exactly a spa day.
No. Oh, my gosh.
So, needless to say, the whale hotel treatment quickly became a thing of the past. Lucky for old Angus McTavish, aspirin hit the scene in 1899, offering a far less fishy solution to joint pain. And the rise of modern medicine, improved hygiene standards, and the decline of the whaling industry, along with growing efforts toward whale conservation, put the final nail in the coffin, or final harpoon in the blubber, of this bizarre practice.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay, I mean, today we have fish oil, you know, supplements that people can take for this kind of thing, too. So, I mean, in a way, but not like that. And I was just gonna say, like, better hygiene today, but back then, hygiene, not like it is today. So if you smelled like a dead whale carcass then, you smelled like a dead whale carcass for a very long time.
Good old Angus McTavish.
Oh my gosh.
Started a trend. Who knew? He went viral. So gross.
Yeah.
Leave it to a drunk guy.
Right.
So I have a list of a few morsels here at the end, just some rapid fire kind of treatments.
Okay.
of things that I'll rattle off before we wrap this up.
Oh, man.
All right. So I've got 14th century Europe. Okay. So this one was for just generally speaking, like on infection.
Oh,
so okay. Like if you had swollen bubos, like infected areas,
mm-hmm.
The cure was attempted cure was rubbing a chicken butt on these swollen areas to draw out disease.
Alive or dead?
Doesn't specify.
I'm assuming it's alive.
I am assuming alive also.
I have heard this. And
yeah,
I'm just like trying to picture.
Yeah. And then we've got toothaches during the Middle Ages. Your attempted cure. Do you want to just take a guess? This could be fun.
I am going to assume. So we're not talking about removing teeth, correct?
Correct. Okay. Just some random bullshit.
Okay. I'm assuming it involves a gnashing up of a plant and just kind of like rubbing.
Okay, you're close.
Ooh, okay.
It's not a plant. It's a dead mouse.
Oh!
So you just mash a dead mouse into a paste and you just put it right on the tooth.
No.
Just right in the general area. Yeah.
Oh.
And then rabies. In medieval Europe, the attempted cure is to drown the patient. So you just, you know, submerge the rabies patient in water because they're possessed by demons. So if you drown them, that's going to cure them of the rabies because it's caused by demons.
Jeez.
And then if you have paralysis in medieval Europe, this one.
Oh, no.
So the way you attempt to cure that is you beat the paralyzed person with a dead body.
What?
You strike them with a dead body. You know, whatever limb is paralyzed, you just hit them with the corpse. And that's supposed to help restore movement.
Was this because they thought it was the bad humors and that bad humors would rub off on dead thing?
I can't determine the logic.
What in the shit?
Baldness in ancient Egypt. This one's going to get you.
Yes.
This
one's going to get you. I think I know this one.
Do you?
I think so.
So it has to do with dung.
Yes.
Hippopotamus fat and crocodile dung. So yep. You just smear that all over the top of the scalp.
Yep.
You know, just rub that in there for baldness. Yeah.
Smelled real good, I'm sure.
And then impotence in the 16th and 17th century Europe. You are going to eat
some... Are we going to beat somebody's balls?
No, but you're going to eat some ground up animal testicles.
Oh, wow. That makes sense.
Because if your cojones aren't working, you're going to eat some animal cojones.
I mean, the balls is a life, I guess.
That's the logic. Epilepsy, we already talked about that.
Yep.
Drinking human blood.
Yep.
But they consumed it from freshly executed prisoners.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah. That I found to be interesting.
Yeah.
Acne. Man. We've kind of talked about this before.
Yeah.
Sulfur and mercury. I have a hard time with that word. It's one of my kryptonite words. Mercury paste.
Ouch.
Yeah, so put that corrosive mercury and sulfur paste right on the skin.
Right. That's going to make it way worse.
It's going to clear up your pimples, but it's also going to take your face off.
Yep. So you won't have pimples with no skin.
You don't have to worry about acne anymore because you're also not going to have a face.
Oh, balls. Oh, no.
Scurvy, 18th century naval medicine. The common cure for that was to drink urine.
Yep.
Yep. Smallpox. No. This one.
Oh.
guesses? You know this one?
This one involves hot rods, doesn't it?
So that may be one. This one I particularly pulled from ancient China in the 10th century.
Oh.
This one's pretty fucking gross.
They didn't. Okay, this wasn't a submerging one, was it?
No. Okay. So this one, they ground up smallpox scabs into a powder and then they snorted them.
Oh, dude, no.
But if you think about it, they were kind of on the right path.
Right.
A little bit.
Vaccine injection type thing. But
yeah, it's really, really gross. But they were kind of on the right path. So kudos to them for getting close.
Yeah.
And then this last one. This last one's pretty funny. Broken bones in medieval England in the 13th century.
Oh, no.
Not helpful at all, I will say. So they did bone binding charms. And the way they would do this is wrapping bones in prayer scrolls or magical charms. Instead of setting the bones, they would wrap them in prayer scrolls.
Oh.
And just hope they would magically just reset themselves.
What in the shit? Yeah, because prayer scrolls
are... I can't say that one either.
I almost said prayer scrolls. prayer scrolls, well, any scroll, is so flimsy. You're not doing anything with that. There's no
compression. But it's the magic,
there.
Blair.
It's the, yeah.
It's the magic.
Oh!
But what's interesting about that is, like, some bones can heal themselves naturally. Like, my toe, when I broke my toe, it healed itself. So I guess the logic there would be, like, some of them can heal themselves. Like, they're not going to... I mean, it had to be reset manually, but, like, after that, it healed itself, but...
Right.
So maybe that was the thought, is like, oh, well, be healed by this magic spell because...
Right.
Whatever.
Be like, yeah, buddy, you're shit out of luck. Here's some scrolls.
You broke your femur at a 90-degree angle. Let me wrap a piece of paper around it and see how you fare.
Uh-huh. You're definitely going to want to pray on that one. you might not make it through that. Say your prayers now, because that infection's probably going to get you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, someone didn't write this prayer very well. You missed a few words.
You missed a few. Oh my gosh. I'm still not over the beating.
With the corpse?
Yes.
I'm not over the chicken butt.
Neither am I. I'm not over all of it. The goose
or the whale hotel. Some drunk guy's like, yeah, I just crawled inside. Nobody even questions, like, dude, you were drunk. I'm not going to take the word of a drunk guy.
Right? Like, and still being drunk, I'm sorry. I don't know what level you need to be at to be like that right there. I'm going to try it.
Clearly didn't care how bad it smelled.
Right?
It's all right in there.
Oh.
It's like, what? I mean, I have other thoughts, but I'm not going to say them on here. Who knows what else he was doing?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, man, no.
Well, that, my friends, is... The second installment of Q is for quackery and all the weird ways to not care what ails you. And I hope you got a good laugh out of this one.
Oh, I quacked.
I know. I needed it after the last couple of episodes.
Right.
It's always nice to have a little dark humor in the mix here on Macabre. And
yes.
Every now and then you need to just tickle that dark funny bone.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Corpsey and Cadaver, our bony mascots, would be so proud.
They're very proud. They're like on the floor beside themselves laughing now.
They just quacked up.
They quacked up. They can't even handle it.
Oh. Yeah, that's all I have for this episode. And you want to hear about some more weird shit from ancient history? Check us out on Patreon for Worst Ways to Die, because that shit gets weird.
Oh, yeah.
And if you have any topics you want us to cover for Hometown Macabre, definitely send us some suggestions.
All right. Well, as you know.
Housekeeping.
On the back end today, put on your gloves. Not the whale hole. We're going to house clean now. So, if you want a little bit more from us, as Hallie was saying, yeah, buddy, we got some stuff going on the Patreon, where you get just a little bit more from us if you want that. So, we're there. If you want to become part of the fam, definitely check out that private Facebook group. There's some amazing people over there with some amazing things being shared. And you want to talk about laughing. That is the spot to be laughing. It's a good way to start the day. We also have the option. You can submit your stuff to us. You can do that in many ways. You can write it to us at thatssomacabre@gmail.com. You can talk it out to us, full-blown, old-fashioned storytelling style, on our website, macabrepod.com. There is a SpeakPipe option. And, yeah, I mean, a lot of our fam have been suggesting stuff over on the Facebook group. So, yeah, all of the areas you can contact us, throw out some ideas. Experiences you've had. That's what we base our Hometown Macabres off of. So if you've got a story, we want to hear it. You want to have it on the show, be our guest. We want to have it on the show too. And that's what I've got for you. That's where you can reach us and find us and all of the goodness.
Always.
Always.
Don't try to cure yourself in some weird way. Yeah. That never goes well.
Yeah. Especially not with a chicken butt.
Or a whale.
Or slapping somebody with anything.
A body part.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Without consent, anyways.
Yeah.
Consent, you know, first.
Wink. Yeah, exactly. Until next time, friends. If you weren't shocked this episode, I don't know what you're wanting, but...
We'll shock you later. You later. Bye!
Bye!
If I play him, the remote will be me. Are you very safe, Phil? I am like the police. The bridge. I shrug to keep the time continue. I shrug to leave the day. And this already ain't that.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.